Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday. It's been a while since I've been here on a Sunday night. I think in mid-May I was here, but I began to have computer problems. Some of you may know about that. Plus, I had travel and a few things on my calendar, like one night was the circus, I think. And there were just a variety of reasons that I haven't been here in about 6 weeks. So it's my first time back in a long time, and it's nice to be back. It's nice to see all of y'all. There's a lot of people in the room. It's very nice to see you. Typically, what I do during this time is I share from the Seven Steps to Awakening as well as my journal. And like I mentioned, when I started taking a break, that one of the reasons I started taking a break was I was just having a lot of computer problems. And so there's a couple of Seven Steps teachings that never made it to be recorded because it just wasn't working out. So what I thought I would do, the next step that I'm ready for is 559, but the two that didn't get recorded were 554 and 555. It was some kind of a burp that night. That was the beginning of the computer problems, I guess. So I thought what I might do is go back and kind of catch 554 and 555 so that they're recorded, and then jump over to 559. So if anybody here has the Seven Steps to Awakening and you want to join me in the book, that means I'm going to be concentrating on pages 96 and 97. Also, I will be sharing from my journal. So what I'm going to do right now is paste into the room the link to 554 in my Seven Steps journal. And if somebody's listening on the radio, you can find that at RDA7. It is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to the website, if you look up on the menu bar, you can choose step 3, because that's where we're at in the Seven Steps. And then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find yourself, find your own way to 554, and that's where we're going to begin. And what I'm going to do is just start with a brief moment of silence, not too long, because I just got back from walking the dog in the hot weather, and if I sit here with my eyes closed being silent too long, I might fall asleep. So we'll take a brief moment of silence, and then we'll go ahead and get started. But you know how the sun can kind of wear you out sometimes, so that's what I'm feeling right now, having just come in a little bit ago from the heat. So why don't we just be still for a moment. Amen. And that was enough for me. I didn't need any more than that. I felt the connection happen. And that's what I was just looking for, was just that connection. I don't know exactly what it's a connection to, but it's a connection that I like to make before teaching. So connection to the heart. So it happened. And that's good. I'm happy. That means I'm ready. So as I mentioned, I'm going to go back and pick up 554 and 555. So I'm going to start first by reading 554 to you from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, and then we'll look at my journal, which is the link I gave you. Let me see whose quote this is, because, you know, The Seven Steps to Awakening, for those of you who don't know it, it's just a collection of quotes. It looks like all the quotes that I'm looking at tonight are from Sri Muruganar, who was a poet and a devotee of Ramana Maharshi's, and is said to have awoken while he was with Ramana Maharshi. So this is one of his quotes. Dualistic concepts such as I and he are a treacherous trick of the mind that assumes the form of the body. Eliminate, therefore, this powerful mental imagination and discern the self. It's funny because before we got to that last line, about eliminate this powerful mental imagination, just in reading the first line, I quickly flashed back to what was probably my, no, I'm certain it was my first year studying A Course in Miracles, because I remember sitting on the sofa in my home in Acton, Massachusetts. So that was my first year. And I don't remember exactly what I was contemplating in A Course in Miracles, but probably something like, I am not a body. I am free. I am still as God created me. Either that or something very similar to that. And while I'm trying to contemplate that thought, I think I had like a bellyache, you know, and just different stuff happening with the body while I'm trying to contemplate, I am not a body. I am free, or whatever I was contemplating. And I remember thinking, you know, like, how the hell can you get to where you believe you're not a body when the whole time you're trying to contemplate, the body's, you know, got stuff going on, like a bellyache and stuff like that. And I just thought the idea that I am not a body, well, it was a long shot. Let's just put it that way. It was a long shot. But something has shifted, and I don't even quite know how to describe what has shifted. It's not that I don't still have the experience of a body. As I mentioned, you know, just prior to teaching, you know, the body was a little tired because I came in from the heat. So the experience of the body is still here. The difference is the thought, I am. That's what's different. The thought, I am, somehow is shifted. So it kind of stops with I am instead of I am a body. So the experience of the body is here. You know, it's not that hard to really understand, because, like, if I make a loud noise, hold on one second. See, the experience of a loud noise is there for you, right? But you don't believe you are a loud noise, do you? So you can have an experience of something without believing you are it. And that is what has shifted. So that's what came into my mind as I was reading the first half of this quote. Dualistic concepts such as I and he are a treacherous trick of the mind that assumes the form of the body. And then the second sentence, eliminate therefore this powerful mental imagination and discern the self. It seems like, there's a story. It might be a Sufi story. There's a story I have read in the last year that I can at least partially recall. I'll begin telling it and maybe it will come back fully. But even if it doesn't come back fully, it's not important. It's a story about a guy who thought he was a mouse. That's it. He believed, you know, he had a psychological illness and he believed he was a mouse. And as a result, he had a great fear of cats. And so he went to, you know, the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist told him he was not a mouse, he was a person, a man. And he told him to recite to himself, you know, I am not a mouse, I am a person, right? And just continue reciting that, kind of like we recite, I am not a body, I am free, I am still as God created me. Right? He told him to recite, I am not a mouse, I am a person. And I don't remember how long this went on. It went on for some time, but at some point the guy began to think, you know what? It's true, I am not a mouse, I am a person. And so he went into the psychiatrist that day so happy, and he says, oh, you know, he says, I understand now what you've been trying to tell me. I am not a mouse, I am a person, I get it. And the psychiatrist goes, that's wonderful. And the man goes, yes, it is. And he goes, but tell me, do you think the cats get it too? You know, and I'm sure even as I sit here saying that something has shifted, and I'm certain that I'm telling the truth, I'm certain that at another level, it's still stuck too. You know, like somewhere in between the two, like that guy was, somewhere in between the two. I don't have the same attachment to the body that I used to have. But, you know, the other day this Rottweiler started charging at me, and I definitely jumped back up on my porch. So, you know, in that moment, I jumped back on the porch to keep the body safe. So who knows, you know, exactly, you know, where I'm at with this. But, yeah, but there has still been a shift, some type of a shift. And what's interesting is, you know, how he talks, how Muru Ganar says, eliminate, therefore, this powerful mental imagination. You know, he's saying the idea that I am the body is a powerful mental imagination, just like that man's idea that he was a mouse was just a powerful mental imagination. Or if you thought you were this loud noise, that would be a powerful mental imagination. It's not at all the truth. And I think that the reason I say something has shifted is because I do have a sense of being awareness, which I used to not have at all. I used to not have that sense at all. I do have that sense. But yet when a Rottweiler came running at me the other day, I did jump up on the porch. So who knows what's going on here? You know, maybe crossing that bridge of letting go of that imagination, but it not yet being completely let go of. But I think, you know, crossing the bridge. With that said, what I would like to do is go ahead and read my journal entry that I wrote after contemplating this. The journal entry, number 554, says, what am I? And then it says, stay as that. So you can tell already that when the question, what am I, is asked, there is a shift of focus that occurs, where what we have is attention on awareness, or awareness on awareness, or awareness of awareness. So rather than having awareness thinking about, you know, whatever's in the mind, having the awareness be focused there, or having the awareness focused on the tummy ache, you know, there's an awareness on awareness itself. And the way you know that that happens so quickly and so easily is by looking at the next line, stay as that. And it couldn't say stay as that so quickly if there wasn't a shift that was occurring when the question was asked, what am I? So again, something is definitely shifting. Something has definitely shifted, even though that shift may still be in progress. Probably is still in progress. By the way, I jumped on the porch on Friday. Right? What am I? Stay as that. Speak as that. Let I mean that. Know myself in all things. This type of contemplation, of course, is just a very, very simple contemplation which helps to focus on that. You know, it's quite simple. And in fact, I don't think I have anything else to say about it. So if you are in the Seven Steps Journal, at number 554, you can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area, and you'll see where it says 555A. So it looks like 555 is broken up into parts. So you can just click on 555A. And I'm going to read 555 first from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, this is a Muru Ganar quote. Even now, if you entirely eradicate the personal ego based on the multifarious nature of the non-self, you will experience an intense and limitless awakening as your true nature, the Supreme Self, shines out. And I know in May when I taught this, I looked up the word multifarious, but already I've kind of forgotten what that means. So I'm looking it up again now. Let's see. Multifarious, just like it sounds. Okay, many and varied. Okay, that's kind of what I thought. Many and varied. Many and varied. So let's read this again with that definition in mind. Even now, if you entirely eradicate the personal ego based on the many and varied nature of the non-self, you will experience an intense and limitless awakening as your true nature, the Supreme Self, shines out. It's kind of interesting because just lately, like in the last few days, very, very recently, one thing that I've been noticing in a way that I haven't noticed before is the multifarious nature of the non-self, or the many and varied, you know. And you know, going back to the story of Friday of when the dog ran at me, you know, like it was quite interesting because there was this peace joy happening, and then I went out to check the mail, and then I hear something, and I look, and there's this Rottweiler running at me, growling and barking. And I don't remember now, but I would assume I felt a very quick adrenaline thing. I know I jumped back up on the porch. And then immediately after I jumped back on the porch, the dog stopped. And then there was just this curiosity arose, like, who is this dog? In fact, I called out to my neighbor, is that your dog? And like, whatever fear or adrenaline was there that led me to jump up on the porch was immediately gone. You know, the situation changed and it was gone. And then I'm just looking at the situation, and the dog actually did not belong to anyone, so I ended up calling, there were two of them, and I ended up calling animal services to come get them, because nobody knew who they were. But for some reason, what I noticed in that experience is how quickly experience changed. I mean, I kind of noticed that one minute, if I was identifying with myself, right? Let's put it this way. If I was identifying with myself, one moment I would say, I'm a happy, peaceful self. And then the next moment there was this, I don't know if I was scared. It happened so quickly. I don't know that fear was there. It was adrenaline. You know, I'm an adrenaline charged self. That's probably fair. And then the next moment would have been, I'm an investigatory self, investigating what's happening. And then if I was to identify with everything that happened, everything that came through, every experience I had, my identification would have to change moment by moment by moment. This is what I noticed. And I really noticed this starting on Friday. So we're talking about a very recent experience. And then later that day, I was listening to Jeff Foster. He was being played here in the room. And I think, at least the way I heard him, was he was talking about the same thing. So, and now we have Muru Ganar talking about the same thing, the multifarious nature of the non-self. You know, it's kind of funny, if you think about it, or if you watch it, it's kind of funny that we identify with these experiences that are temporary and always changing. You know, I mean, how can I say I'm a happy self, or I'm an angry self, or I'm a smart self, or I'm a dumb self, or I'm a pretty self, or I'm an ugly self, or I'm an old self, or I'm a young self, you know, when all of these things change. And yet, when we're not looking at it with wisdom, that's exactly what we do. I'm a good driver, I'm a bad driver. You know, we temporarily identify with something as if that's who we are permanently. And it can't be who we are permanently because it changes so quickly. One moment I'm peaceful and happy, the next moment there's an adrenaline jump, and then the next moment there's a curiosity and an investigatory nature, right? I mean, you know, it's just, it's different. The nature, that changing nature is not permanent. So to identify with it doesn't actually make any sense at all. And the funny thing is also when we identify with these changing natures, you know, one moment we're proud, right? I'm the good driver. You know, I'm the responsible person. I'm the smart person. I'm the attractive person. You know, when those ideas are there, we feel proud or feel good about ourselves in some way. And then there's these other things that we identify with that make us feel unworthy, less than, shameful. I'm a bad driver. I cut that guy off. I almost had a wreck. I upset that dog. I turned that dog into the dog catcher. You know, if we identify, one moment we feel good, one moment we feel bad. It's constantly fluctuating. And the whole thing is a made up idea because in the next moment it changes anyway. So a part of what I've really been noticing in the last few days is this multifarious nature of the non-self and how it makes no sense to identify with that changingness that happens. And again, Murugunara is saying, even now, if you entirely eradicate the personal ego based on the multifarious nature of the non-self, well, what is the personal ego and how would you entirely eradicate it? You know, the personal ego is the idea that I am this, right? Identification with form. And the way that you entirely eradicate it is just to see that doesn't make any sense at all. How could I be a bad driver when yesterday I was a good driver? You know, how could I be an adrenaline rush person when a moment ago I was a peaceful, happy person? How could I be, you know, it just doesn't make sense. So it's through wisdom that you see that you are constant and these changing happenings are only changing happenings, but they're not you any more than that loud noise is you, right? I mean, you experience it when I'm pounding on my desk, but then the experience ends. And it's not what you are. So you eradicate the ego by noticing that you are constant and these other things are passing through. These other things are changing. They're not at all what you are. Even now, if you entirely eradicate the personal ego based on the multifarious nature of the non-self, you will experience an intense and limitless awakening as your true nature, the Supreme Self, shines out. Okay, so let's go peek and see what I wrote for 555A. It is time. Nothing else is needed. Ask ongoingly, who am I? Realize no answer as the answer. Stay as that, be that now. The funny thing is, if you were to ask ongoingly, who am I, and allow the mind to answer, you know, don't suppress it, allow the mind to answer, you will easily see how the mind's answers change. You will easily see one moment I'm a peaceful person, I'm a spiritual person, I'm even a spiritually advanced person, and the next moment, oh my God, I'm such a loser. You know, I became afraid of a dog or just whatever your current story is. You'll notice if you keep asking, who am I, in a conscious way, you'll notice that the mind is always answering that question anyway, you just weren't noticing. And you'll start to notice the ridiculousness of identifying with the mind's ideas because you'll notice they change moment by moment by moment by moment. And the more clearly you see that, the less likely you're going to be attached to the mind's beliefs about who you are. So it's really very helpful to continue to ask, who am I? Go ahead, let the mind answer. But again, notice that. I'm a good driver. And the next moment, I'm a bad driver. One moment, I'm a good cook. The next moment, I'm a bad cook. One moment, I'm a good friend. The next moment, I'm a bad friend. Just notice how it's so incredibly inconsistent. And that's very helpful to breaking the attachment to believing the mind. So again, 555A, it is time. Nothing else is needed. Ask ongoingly, who am I? Realize no answer as the answer. Stay as that, be that now. Again, what is the space between the thought of I am a good driver and I am a bad driver? What is that space? That's what we are. What is the space between I'm a good cook, I'm a bad cook? What's the space between I'm a spiritual person, I'm a loser? Find that space and you find the truth. And then just stay as that. And as you stay as that, the other experiences will continue to come and go, but the identification with them doesn't happen. I'm going to scroll underneath the comment and reply area and click on 555B and see what it says. Again, it's still looking at the same quote. And this contemplation says, the time is now, always continuous. Ask, what am I? Let self wash over all thoughts, perceptions, experiences. Be clear, empty as self. Arise as self, clear, empty. Again, if you keep asking that question, who am I or what am I? And again, you notice how the mind's answers change. And so you know that you can't be any of that, any of it. And then you start noticing kind of the space between the answers. And you realize that you are there in the space between the answers. Although that's nothing that you can see or nothing that you can point at, it is something that you can realize. And so then you begin to focus on that more and more, that space between the answers, that isness, that awareness, that beingness. And that's what this means when it says, let self wash over all thoughts, perceptions, and experiences. It means that as things come and go, whether it's a thought coming and going or an experience coming and going or a perception coming and going, now keep noticing what isn't changing. Notice what's right there in the space, and it's always there. Notice you may look away from it for a moment. Your attention may go to an idea, ah, geez, why did I do that? I'm such a stupid idiot. But then you remember, wait a minute, yesterday I was so smart when I had this other idea. If I was smart yesterday, stupid idiot today, that neither can be true. What's between them? What's in the space between them? What am I really? And then you can refocus on yourself again. The one that is neither smart nor stupid, or beyond smart and stupid, or contains both smart and stupid. You know, the space. And the more that you focus on the space, the more you have the experience of being the space itself. Other things still come and go, right? Other experiences still come and go, but you're no longer identifying with them. They're just coming and going. It's just what this moment holds, this moment's experience. You know, like right this second, because I'm sitting here talking, my mouth is dry, right? Okay, I'm going to take a glass of water, take a sip. Now my mouth is not dry. You know, it's constantly changing. But what is the same, regardless of whether the mouth is dry or not dry? That's what we want to tune into. That's the self. And by tuning into that, we do lose that feeling that I'm the body. Because we notice the body is another one of the things that is changing. We lose the sense that I am my thoughts because we notice the thoughts are constantly changing. In fact, the thoughts just are the most inconsistent of anything. And yet, we tune into the consistency. I'm going to read 555B again. The time is now. Always continuous. Ask, what am I? Let self, and in this case I'm referring to the space, the isness, wash over all thoughts, perceptions, experiences. Be clear, empty, as self. Arise as self. Clear, empty. So 555A was kind of bringing our attention to what I am not, so that we could see clearly, there's no way I could be that. And then 555B is bringing our attention to what I am, so we see just as clearly, ah, yeah, that is what I am. I see that. It's always here. So that was 554 and 555, which did not get recorded because of computer errors. 556, 57, and 58 are computed, are recorded. See, the mouth doesn't work anymore, but the mouth used to work perfectly. So can I be the mouth? Can I be the brain? Or do I have to be that space that is there, whether the mouth and brain work or whether the mouth and brain don't? So I'm going to go on to 559. So what I'm going to do is go down to the underneath the comment and reply area, and I'm going to click on 556 and then just keep right on clicking 557A, 557B, 557C, 558, and then 559A. And I'll go ahead and post that link in the room again. There you go. 559A. So that's where I'll begin now. And first I'm going to read, this is the final Muruganar quote for step three of the seven steps of awakening, so I'll read that. Allow reality to shine as it truly is, without any obstacle whatsoever, by means of the destruction of the age-old deceit of the hostile ego. You know, we talk about, in our culture, we talk about Satan, the devil, as a liar. But the ego is a liar. You know, I would, you know, the part of me that wants to be very, very gentle and talk about, you know, the ego is really nothing. And it really is nothing. But when we believe those ideas, what we're really doing is we're listening to a liar. You know, it's defining us, and as we've already seen, in one moment I'm good, in one moment I'm bad, but it's defining who I am, and it's defining who everyone else is, and in one moment I like that person, that was really cool what they did, and the next moment I don't like that person, that was very rude, not thoughtful, whatever. And when the ego is doing all this normal human chatter, what it's really, really, really doing is lying about who we are and about what everything is. We are most definitely being deceived. There was a period of time that right now I can't quite remember. I just know that it happened. There was a period of time when something arose in me temporarily where the thought occurred of quitting this spiritual path. I remember during that time I was really identifying with the song from Jesus Christ Superstar, Gethsemane, when Jesus was feeling very frustrated with the spiritual path himself. And that's how I felt. And I just thought about quitting. I felt like that was the only period of time where I felt like my willingness had died. And the idea that came up in my mind that kept me from quitting, which I'm sure was what we call Holy Spirit, was basically a question. And the question was something like, do you want to be deceived? Or do you want to know the truth? And I don't know why that question turned me around, but it did when it was worded in that way. Do you want to be deceived? Or do you want to know the truth? Maybe the reason it turned me around was because that's kind of what I set out for in the first place. You know, long before I feel like I formally started the spiritual path, many, many years ago, probably around 1988 or so, somewhere between 1988 and 1990, I don't know exactly, I decided to look for truth, search for truth, And at that time, I thought it would be found in one of our Christian religions that had the right interpretation of the New Testament or the right interpretation of the Bible as a whole. And I bought this book called Religions of America, and I bought like 7 different translations of the Bible, and I studied it. I spent hours upon hours upon hours studying, trying to find the religion that had the right interpretation of the Bible so that I could know the truth. But what I did before I started that study was I said this, I think it was the first really heartfelt prayer in my life. And I said this prayer, I said, please help me to find the truth, or please let me find the truth. I said, I don't care what it is, I just want the truth. A very heartfelt prayer. And at the end of that research project, which lasted, I don't know, a year or longer, 18 months, I'm not sure how long it lasted. At the end of that research project, all that really happened was that I realized none of those religions were what we could call the truth. And so, you know, the only thing that really happened was I quit looking for the truth in religion, and that probably opened me up to finding A Course in Miracles about 3 years later. But the point is, that very first heartfelt prayer was saying, I want to know the truth. I don't care what it is. I mean, that's what I was after from the very beginning. I was just after truth. And so fast forward many years later, when for some reason I was feeling a waning of my willingness, and I was really considering quitting, and then the question arose, do you want to be deceived, or do you want to know truth? And that got me going again, because I want to know truth, right? But a part of knowing truth is realizing that the ego is deceit. You know, even when the ego says, I like dot, dot, dot. I prefer dot, dot, dot. I don't like dot, dot, dot. Boy, I wish dot, dot, dot wouldn't happen. That's all deceit. None of that is true. None of that is our thoughts. None of that is the truth about what I am. So, well, the reason we listen to it, of course, is because we don't think it's deceit. We think it is truth. If my mind says, I'm so annoyed with that loud noise, I wish he'd quit doing that, I feel annoyance, right? Because I believe the thought, I'm so annoyed with that loud noise. It never occurs to me that that's a deceit. That's not true about what I am. What I am is not even capable of being annoyed by a loud noise. It doesn't even have that capability in it. So the ego is just deceit. Back to the Muru Ganar quote, allow reality to shine as it truly is, without any obstacle whatsoever, by means of the destruction of the age-old deceit of the hostile ego. Well, how do you destroy the age-old deceit of the hostile ego? Well, I take those words with a bit of a grain of salt. I think you just have to see that it is deceit, and you have to lose interest in it. You know, I have practiced many, many, many times. I mean, if I was annoyed, and I've done this a lot of times in my life, if I was annoyed right now by this noise, and I felt that annoyance rising up in me, then what I would do, instead of yelling, stop it, I hate that noise, instead of doing that, I turn my attention within, I notice the thought, I notice the feelings of being annoyed with the noise, but then I ask, is that true? Is it true that I'm annoyed with the noise? Is there any way, is it possible for me to relax with this noise? Is it possible for me to be okay with this noise? I question the deceit. I've done that with a number of things. I couldn't even begin to tell you how many things I used to believe. And then I questioned. And I found they weren't true. Because if I can relax with the noise, right? Then it's not true that I'm the one who's annoyed with the noise. In fact, the noise itself has nothing to do with what I am. Nothing at all. And so, even though these are pretty strong words, you know, allow reality to shine as it is truly, without any obstacle whatsoever, by means of the destruction of the age-old deceit of the hostile ego, although those are pretty strong words, it almost sounds like you're going out and attacking something. For me, it's not attacking. It's checking with wisdom. Is it true? Is it true that I need space? Is it true that I need quiet? Is it true that I need yada, yada, yada? Or am I just being, just ising? And what is the truth? Dove is mentioning deceit, like the separation between within and without. That, of course, is an email that I received today. I'm wondering if you received the same email. And so that was contemplated this morning as well. And as I was contemplating that this morning, I noticed, although obviously I can still talk about within and without, I noticed that there isn't the same strong sense of separation there that there used to be. I can't claim to have a strong sense of a within and a without. I noticed that immediately upon reading the email. You know, all of these things are just ideas, right? All right, so let's see what I wrote in the journal. 559A, after contemplating this Muruganar quote, I wrote, "The greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this." The greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this. And the reason that that needed to be pointed out to me as the greatest lie is because that's what needed to be questioned the most clearly. I mean, it's wonderful to question, do I have to be annoyed by that noise? Right? It's wonderful to question that and see that, no, actually, I do not have to be annoyed. That was just a thought that I was believing, right? But I also really need to, at some point, I mean, I don't want to just end up a peaceful person who isn't disturbed by anything. That's not yet the truth. So I have to go beyond questioning things like a noise and my ideas that it annoys me. I need to question the root of the I itself, the root of the belief that I am a person separate from everyone and everything. And so as I contemplated the 7 Steps to Awakening, quote number 559, that's what I saw. And that's why that was written. The greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this. Therefore, what needs to be questioned most consistently is the thought that I am this. I'm going to scroll down underneath 559A, and I'm going to click on 559B. It's a continuation of the exact same contemplation. The greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this. And we believe this lie as if it is an unquestionable fact. That is just me getting clear with myself. Getting clear with how much it has been believed, how consistently it has been believed, how it has been taken for granted that I am this, this person, this personality, this mind. Because sometimes it seems like before something can really be questioned thoroughly, it needs to be looked at deeply. It needs to be honored with honesty just how much something has been believed. And so that's all that's happening with this particular contemplation. It's just me looking at just how much it's been believed. It was believed as if it was an unquestionable fact, beyond question, an absolute fact that I am this. That's how much it was believed. And now 559C. Do not give support to I am this. So what happened here was, as I was looking at how much the idea has been believed, how consistently it's been believed, what I saw is that there's like a loop that happens when you, in effect, people call this conditioning. When you believe something over and over and over, it's like a loop. Every time it shows up, you believe it again without even thinking about it, without questioning it, without looking at it. And that's conditioning, this loop. And so what I was noticing as I was contemplating how deeply this thought, I am this, is believed, I noticed the loop. I could see the loop showing up in many different places. And so what I told myself then was, do not give support to that idea, I am this. That doesn't mean the idea isn't going to show up, because when it's in a loop like that, it's kind of like a wind-up toy, you know, and it's the loop is happening all by itself now, and the idea is going to show up over and over and over again. I am this, I am this, I am this. It'll show up with different words in different ways, but it's the same core idea showing up. And what I can't do, at least not as far as I'm aware, is I can't put my hand out and say, stop, and stop that loop. I can't make it stop. It's too wound up. So recognizing that the loop is going to continue to run, what I need to do then is I need to be willing to see those ideas appear without any judgment about the fact that the ideas appeared, without any identification with the idea that I'm a loser because those ideas are still appearing, right? I need to be that space. And I see that the idea arises within the space. But then I do not give it the support. I just see it. I just look at it. But I do not give it the support. And by do not give it the support, I mean I do not give it the belief, nor do I give it judgment for being there, because that's also support, backwards support. So I want to be the space. And if the loop continues to show up in the space without any support, then what's happening is the loop is no longer being wound up. And since the loop is no longer being wound up, it starts to slow down. And sometimes these loops even just quietly die out. I'm going to 559D. Again, we're still contemplating the same Muruganar quote, but let me read the quote again because we haven't looked at it in a little bit. Allow reality to shine as it truly is, without any obstacle whatsoever, by means of the destruction of the age-old deceit of the hostile ego. And, you know, as I read this quote now, after having gone through 559 A, B, and C, you know, there's this strong sense of how reality can shine when that loop dies out from lack of attention or lack of support and lack of judgment. Because the reality is what was there already anyway, and it's just that the loop, the belief, right, was kind of distracting us. Our attention was on the belief. And so we were kind of sucked into it and we were distracted. But as we gently, with heart, withhold support, we allow the loop to kind of run itself out, but then all that's left is the shininess of the self, right? Allow reality to shine as it truly is, without any obstacle whatsoever. Without any obstacle whatsoever, without any loop, right? By means of the destruction of the age-old deceit of the hostile ego. And so now I'm going to read 559D. The greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this. Do not give support to this lie. Remain aware of the changing nature of this. And we talked about that at the beginning of the hour, right? Notice the multifarious nature. You know, one moment I'm a good driver. One moment I'm a bad driver. One moment I'm smart. One moment I'm stupid. One moment I'm spiritually advanced. One moment, you know, I'm such an idiot. You know, I'll never get it right. I'm, you know, right? Be aware of the changing nature of those thoughts of who I am. The greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this. Do not give support to this lie. Remain aware of the changing nature of this. Seek the changeless nature of I before I. Now, Ramana Maharshi used to refer to the self as I. And I can't say I know for certain why he would use that term, but I know what that term means for me. It's like going deeper, like the initial I is often mistaken for, you know, the body-mind personality. And so instead of the initial I, it's I, pointing deeper into what I'm going to call the heart or the self. So it's looking for that I, deeper, right? The second I, although it's really the first I, coming from the perspective of the surface, it's the second I. The greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this. Do not give support to this lie. Remain aware of the changing nature of this. Seek the changeless nature of I before I. Notice the difference between that which is changeless and that which changes. Ask, what am I? So that was my guidance for myself after contemplating 559. Okay, so Michael is writing, the Sufi story and the Rottweiler story are closely related. Yeah, that's why I told them together. I see that. In the Sufi story, the man finally got it. I am not a mouse. Then he wondered, but do the cats get it? Yeah. When Regina jumped up on the porch, she still realized I am not the body. However, she wondered, but does the Rottweiler get it? Yeah, and that's what I saw too, Michael. That's why I said, you know, apparently I'm on some kind of a bridge. You know, it would not be honest to say there has been no shift, right? There's been a lot of shift that has occurred, a lot of seeing differently, being differently, a lot of awareness. When used to, I wondered what the heck those words even meant. And yet, when the Rottweiler came, I jumped up on the porch. So I do see that, which is why I told the two stories together. And at the same time, you know, and I laugh at that, but at the same time, what I don't want to do is identify with anything. That seems to be what 559 is kind of saying to me. So even though that experience is exactly what happened, and I laugh at the experience, and I see it for what it is, and I'm completely honest about it, I don't want to make a statement that says something like, I am here and I still have this that's not done, and there's an identification that could happen there. And I would rather not do that. I'd rather be honest about the experience, but also, you know, giggle at it and let the experience go. It seems to me that what is most helpful is remaining as unidentified as possible. And, of course, there will be times then that I am identified, and as soon as I see that, saying, ah, yeah, I see, and then letting that go. That seems to be what is coming to me as I'm looking at 559. Again, listen to the 559 guidance. For me, it's a very simple guidance. It feels like a very perfect guidance. It's noticing what changes, and it's also noticing what doesn't at the same time. Right? So there's peaceful Regina, then there's adrenaline rush Regina, and then there's investigatory Regina. But what was the same? What is not peaceful Regina because it's beyond that? And what is not adrenaline rush Regina because it is beyond that? And what is not investigatory Regina because it is beyond that? And it seems that placing my attention there, awareness with that, feels most helpful. And that is most easily done if I do not identify with a changing state. So again, the greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this. The greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this. Do not give support to this lie. And again, we can be very tempted to identify with a spiritual self. You know, I call it the spiritual ego. But that's just another I am this. You know, even if I say I'm a peaceful person, that's just another I am this, right? The greatest lie ever told is the lie, I am this. Do not give support to this lie. Remain aware of the changing nature of this. So notice it. Notice how it changes. Notice how one moment it's happy, the next moment it's nervous, the next moment it's laughing, the next moment it's, you know, whatever. Remain aware of the changing nature of this. Seek the changeless nature of I before I, back before, right? Notice the difference between that which is changeless and that which changes. Ask, what am I? It's a practice of watching awareness and watching change, and therefore coming to see from our own experience which one is real and always here and which one is just passing fancies. Yeah. And with that, I am out of time. So I'll be here again next week, and next week we'll begin looking at Sri Annamalai Swami, number 560. And Michael, thank you for being here. It was nice having you here, as well as everyone else. But Michael is the one who publishes the Seven Steps to Awakening, so I appreciate having him here while I share from it. Yeah. All right, everyone. See you in a couple hours. Bye.